Good morning. 7 minutes after 7 o'clock, you're listening to the Joy Cardine program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. Of course, 7 o'clock on Mondays is reserved for our state capitol report. The governors from around the country met in Milwaukee this weekend, and Wisconsin Public Radio's Chuck Quirnbach was there. Chuck joins me this morning to talk about that meeting. Chuck, good morning.
Good morning. It's the State Capitol East edition again.
State Capitol East edition. Okay, good. So noted. So the governors met in Milwaukee. Big deal for Wisconsin to host the governors?
Well, it got some publicity, but listen, you know, there was not a huge amount of news from this event. It is always news when a large number of powerful people come in, but as far as national covers, there was not a lot, quite frankly. There were some interesting sessions and some news made, but it was better, for Milwaukee and Wisconsin that these chief executives came in, got a good look at the city, and apparently had a good time.
Spent a little money and then left, which is what we want tourists to do, right? The what were the basic themes of the conference?
Well, a lot of it was Congress is in gridlock. Congress and the federal government are in gridlock, and that hurts the states in the way of getting news on what sort of transportation dollars are coming our way, housing dollars and other things. There's some suggestion that the states can pull through on their own, but they, like a lot of governors, would like to see the bottom line for the next 12, 24 months coming out of Washington. There were also sessions on things like cyber terrorism, corrections, and other things. Again, with sort of the balance, you know, we're the laboratories of democracy, the states, but it would be nice for our partners in Washington to get it together. Of course, there's some debate within Congress about whether they want to now go ahead with spending cuts that would hurt the states, and that's sort of where the rubber meets the road in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Given the partisan divide in this country, which seems to be bigger than probably ever before, what do the governors find points where they can all agree?
Well, again, that they're strong leaders, and that there's need for fiscal restraint. But again, where does it affect them? Now, there is some agreement that, or at least some initiatives about the states saving money on their own instead of looking to Washington for more. I attended a session on corrections, cutting costs in corrections, and there were presentations from corrections officials or research experts in the state of Washington and Rhode Island, and a couple of governors, including from South Dakota, talked about how they're reducing costs, including by getting more nonviolent people into drug treatment and getting them out of the prisons. Governor Walker came in late to that session, listened certainly to the South Dakota governor talk about his plan, but the governor Walker did not stay to ask questions. It's and left early. We know that there's been some reluctance here to reduce prison populations by a whole lot because there's some back and forth about whether legislators who represent districts with prisons in them would perhaps lose some income for their districts. It's sort of the prison industrial complex argument. So not sure if we're going to see a major initiative in the next 12 months about reducing prison costs in Wisconsin, but certainly Governor Walker got a bit of a briefing on how to do that.
Speaking of Governor Walker, he did talk to reporters a few times during the weekend, and he made what some are calling a little bit of a Freudian slip, and I think we have audio of that. If we do, and if it's ready, can we go ahead and roll that? And then, Chuck, I want you to talk about this a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, right now, I got my hands full being governor. I'm not real involved yet at the strike that last word. I'm not involved at the federal level.
I'm not involved yet. So
the key word there is yet. He was asked about Congress using the budget process to delay the Affordable Care Act, some versions of that. And again, he's saying that, well, I'm not there yet. And in Washington, you know, the thought is that his thought is perhaps that he will be someday. And he's got to get reelected governor next year, you would think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe he's just being coy. Were there any protests?
A little bit, not major protests. The AFL-CIO had an event along with others talking, urging the governors from about a block away to make use of Made in America laws. In other words, buy local, buy within the U.S. for your state purchasing to help create jobs here. There are other groups, including one that's trying to get big money out of politics, protesting right across the street. The protesters were, by and large, kept a ways away, including by fencing all the way around the Airline Center in Milwaukee. And so there were not large, huge protests. I did not hear of any arrests, but there were some people trying to make their views known and got some publicity doing so.
Okay. Chuck Kornbach, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Chuck Kornbach is our reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio based in Milwaukee. Joining me now as we start to dissect the political news this morning is Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Mordecai, good morning.
Good morning.
What's your take on how big a deal it is that Wisconsin hosted the National Governors Association meeting?
Well, we in Wisconsin like to be proud of our state, and we think we're sort of an important state. But I have to tell you, frankly, that this was an unimportant meeting. This was a minor meeting. And I say that with no denigration of Wisconsin. I'm Wisconsin born and bred. The National Governors Association holds two meetings a year. It holds a summer conference in a nice place in the summer out around the country. And then it holds a winter conference in February in Washington, D.C. And the latter meeting tends to be really the important business meeting because that's Washington is where the power is. The turnout tends to be much higher. Right now, if you go to their website, the number of governors who are committed to turning up in February is higher than the number who came to Milwaukee last weekend. So I think this was a relatively modest affair, and the turnout reflected it.
So, and I think we had a Facebook comment from Roger, who I think would agree with you on this. He says, the coverage gives the national news media something to do, but I'm not sure these conferences are all that important to the voters.
They're not important to the voters, and this one wasn't particularly important to the national news media. We've gotten to a point where just the number of people who work for news organizations has shrunk so much, and their budgets have shrunk so much, that they really don't travel very much. And they tend to travel for politically interesting events, not for policy interesting events. As a general rule, the news media in America isn't very interested in policy. They're much more interested in politics. And so the lack of any major coverage by the big networks is, I think, reflective of exactly Roger put his finger on it.
Mm-hmm. So does anything significant or meaningful happen at these events, or is it all pretty much symbolic? And if so, symbolic of what?
The meaningful stuff, I think, occurs in some of the policy sessions, but mostly occurs in the informal mixing. When one is in politics, you're sort of like an idea hunting machine. You're thinking about, well, I've got a problem about XYZ. I wonder how my colleague, my peer in this other state is handling it. And to have a really sort of let your hair down and have a frank conversation about what are the political pros and cons of doing X, how's it working out for you, those are conversations that one doesn't want to do in a public arena like the formal sessions that Chuck referred to. It's especially important to understand that the National Governors Association is, in a sense, a little weaker now than it used to be. In the older American politics, going way back to the 20th century, when governors were relatively balanced between Democrats and Republicans, and most governors tended to deal with a legislature of another party or at least one house of another party, then their conversations tended to look for policy ideas that were acceptable to both parties. We're now in this very unusual political scenario where most governors are in one-party states. Very few governors are in two-party states. And so to come to a National Governors Association, if you're a one-party governor governor of a state, you tend to only want to talk to governors who are in a similar political position and who are ideologically agree with you. That's when you can learn things. How did you handle X given all the, let's say, partisan landmines, ideological landmines? So I think that's probably where the real business was going on. And nowadays it's so easy to pick up a phone that one doesn't necessarily have to be person-to-person to have those kinds of conversations.
We're going to take a break, and Mordecai Lee, when we come back, I want to get your take on some things that Governor Walker said just a few days before the National Governors Association meeting. We'll take a look at those in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, it's the State Capitol Report on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. My guest is Mordecai Lee, Professor of Governmental Affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Coming up after the news at 7:30, we're going to talk about roundabouts in the state, so stick around for that. So just before the just a few days before the National Governors Association meeting, during a forum in Milwaukee, Governor Walker made some news. He said that if the legislature passed a bill that limited collective bargaining for police and firefighter unions, he'd take a look at it. Democrats pounced on the opportunity, saying, well, just because Walker insists he's not pushing for it doesn't mean he doesn't want it, and that he didn't run for office on ending collective bargaining. What are the arguments for and against taking action on collective bargaining right now, and how much of a political hot potato is this, Mordecai?
I don't think it's much of a hot potato. Governor Walker is a very sure-footed politician with really excellent instincts, and in this case, I think we have to look at his wording. I think in response to the question, it was a conference of the National Governmental Research Association, GRA. And in response to a question, he said something in a kind of, roundabout way, where he was suggesting that, well, he understood that it was logical that maybe some people would think that now that Act 10 has calmed down and Act 10 had carved out an exemption for fire and police, that perhaps there might be a logic for some people to think that it was time to apply to fire and police. That was very far from saying, here's what I want to do or here's what I think is a good idea. And he also quickly realized that it could leave something of a misimpression, and within less than an entire 24-hour news cycle, he made a point to clarify that this was not something that he was planning to do. So I think it was a bit of a bloop, and it was a blip, and it's going to be easily forgotten.
Anything of significance in terms of the timing of this whole thing?
Well, the comment that got the most attention in terms of timing having to do with Act 10 was when he reminded the audience that President Franklin Roosevelt was against public employee labor unions. And he was factually correct. We as Americans are so ahistorical, we tend to think of President Roosevelt as being so pro-left that presumably, surely, he was also in favor of public employee labor unions. No, he was adamantly against them, and Governor Walker, strictly speaking about that aspect of Franklin Roosevelt's legacy, was being accurate. The progressive era movement that Roosevelt came in on the tail end of, the sort of Wilsonian reform movement, was in favor of labor union rights in the private sector, and that's why Roosevelt went ahead with creating the NLRB. But they were sort of good, old-fashioned good government reformers. They thought that a civil service system was a way to protect public employees. They were against public employee unions and definitely against public employee strikes.
Mm. So Walker is also planning on attending a fundraiser for South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley later this month. He's expecting to show up Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, Texas Governor Rick Perry, South Carolina. Well, let's see. Just happens to be an early primary state. So is this event about Nikki Haley, or is it another sign that Walker's thinking about a possible presidential run?
You know, for some reason in America and in Wisconsin, we insist that our politicians appear unambitious. And I really don't understand that. After all, we respect ambition in sports. We respect ambition in the business sector. I don't think there's anything wrong with a governor wanting to move up the ladder. And after all, the hierarchy, the triangle, gets pretty steep over there. There's not a lot of places you can go after you've been governor. So I think it's great that he's seriously thinking about being governor, and I'd say the same thing about a Democratic governor. We would want Wisconsinite politicians to be ambitious and to, in a sense, show off the state, whether we agree with them ideologically or not. So I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think we need to be cute at all about the fact that he's positioning himself to win re-election by a landslide and then run for president. And he's a very careful politician, and he's putting the building blocks together one at a time.
Hmm. So one governor who attended the conference whose ambitions aren't ambiguous, Democratic Governor Martin O'Malley of Maryland, is being pretty open about talking about his preparations to run for president. And I have to say that before I actually read that story, I had no idea who this guy was, and I think that's probably true for a lot of other people in the country, and most importantly for Governor O'Malley, a lot of Democrats don't even know who he is.
Well, John, I think you're right. Both of us are probably higher than average news consumers, but one of the problems is that the national news media is based in New York City and Washington, D.C., and therefore they tend to be out of touch with governors, even somebody as close away as Annapolis to D.C. is. And so generally when they talk about presidential hopefuls, they're talking about U.S. senators or members of Congress. You know, think of all the coverage that Rand Paul is getting or Marco Rubio is getting, whereas, let's say, a governor of Wisconsin or governor of Maryland are not. And that's just sort of the federally centric bias of the news media. I think it's great that there's going to be a wide open race next time around. Both parties have a wonderful bench in their, not just their U.S. senators and their governors, but other figures. And I think we're going to have a wonderful race for president with lots of choice. And that's something we would want. We don't want the national news media to narrow the choice before we as voters have a chance to get a crack at it.
Well, speaking of Wisconsin and Governor Walker, he's got an election toward the end of next year to worry about before he starts thinking about being president. But, you know, there hasn't really been a lot of noise from state Democrats about who might want to challenge Governor Walker, other than former Madison school board member Mary Burke. How difficult is it going to be for someone to mount a campaign against Scott Walker?
John, I think you've really put your finger on it. The fact that there's a political vacuum really defies physics. After all, in high school, we all learned that nature abhors a vacuum. Generally speaking, even when there's a popular governor or a well-funded governor who's going to be running for re-election, generally speaking, there's some elected official in the state legislature, like a state senator or a state member of the state assembly or a member of Congress, who's willing to do what's called up or out. In other words, I think maybe lightning will strike. I'm willing to take a risk. Instead of running for re-election, I'll give up my seat. I'll run for higher office and see how it goes. And there are lots of people who have done up or out and won, and there are even more people who have done up or out and lost. But what's so significant is that nobody from the state legislature is saying that. And that's a signal of how strong Governor Walker is politically, having survived the recall. If only because of his fundraising ability. You know, it's pretty intimidating to run against somebody who essentially has unlimited amounts of money available because of his national base. So the fact that you and I are talking about only one person possibly being interested who doesn't hold a current elected office at the state level is an indication that Democrats apparently are letting that vacuum just stay there.
Well, I mean, other than Tammy Baldwin, name a Democrat who's got statewide name recognition who it wouldn't be considered old news.
I think there are some county executives in Wisconsin, some of whom served in the state legislature, and so we know whether they're Democrats or Republicans. I think there are some closet Democrats who are county executives who would not have to give up their seat to run in a fall election, because after all, county executives are elected in spring nonpartisan elections, who I think might be have the political credentials and have a geographic appeal that I'm surprised none of them is considering running.
So for the Democratic Party, let's say that they find somebody that they can all get behind and they've decided this is the person we want to have elected. What can the Democrats do as an organization? What should their strategy be going into this 2014 election?
I think keep your fingers crossed. And I said that not jokingly. There are a lot of politicians who succeed in moving up the political ladder simply out of blind, dumb luck, being in the right place at the right time. you know, an opponent stumbles, as for example happened in the Indiana U.S. Senate race last time around. That guy was going to win had he not started talking about rape. Sometimes one's opponent missteps, misspeaks. Sometimes it even happens they drop dead. I don't think that's going to be happening to anybody who's facing running against Governor Walker. Governor Walker is a very sure-footed, very disciplined, very on-message kind of politician. One would not expect him to make those kinds of mistakes. So I'm not sure that there's anything the Democrats can do. There would have to be some sort of external event. I don't know, something in the economy, something internationally, something that would really change sort of the building blocks of public opinion for them to have really a serious chance with some serious money.
Okay. Mordecai Lee, thank you so much for joining me this morning for the State Capitol Report. Appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me, John. Good luck.
Mordecai Lee is professor of governmental affairs at the UW-Milwaukee. Well, coming up next, after the news at 7:30, we'll talk with a lawmaker who is behind a bill that would require local governments to give a thumbs up to proposed roundabout projects before construction begins. We're seeing a lot more roundabouts on Wisconsin roads, and the transportation people say it's about safety. We'll talk about that after the news. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network.